So it's like you channel your energy of worry and fear into action.
Yeah. But in a way, you've got to kind of like kiss that rock bottom. For me, I've got to kind of really be frightened. And then I go, okay, stand up, wipe yourself off, and figure out what can you possibly do? Because if you only have a month left, you know, you are in the middle of the arena. The line is there. You have the sword. You better fight, right? And then I get the energy back. But it has happened to me. I mean, I could count, you know, probably on two hands how many times in 30 years it's happened to me. But I use it as a catalyst because I'm human. I despair from time to time. And then I click into, okay, so we're not victims. What are the actions we can take? And if the actions fail, the actions fail. But at least we're going to like fail fighting.
Hello, hello, everyone. Today, I'm delighted to welcome Elle Hill, founder and CEO of Hill & Co. Elle's journey is incredible. She built her own designer jewelry retail brand, took it public in under 4 years. Wow, that's incredible. And now leads one of the most respected growth consultancies in the gemstone and jewelry industry. She's a visionary strategist, respected speaker, and a consultant who helps businesses shine, both literally and figuratively. I'm excited to hear how she carved her path and what's next on her journey. So welcome, Elle. Thank you for joining me on the show.
Hi, Arjun. Thank you so much for inviting me. I love what you're doing. I think the focus is so important and often overlooked. So thank you very much for having me.
The pleasure and honor is all mine. So let's start by understanding a little bit about more what is it that you do? What is the designer jewelry retail brand? What's it all about?
Well, that was my first business. I mean, I had been in the jewelry industry since 1995. And you and I were discussing how I just celebrated my 54th birthday. So I spent my whole career in the industry. And after helming jewelry wholesale manufacturers in America, China, and Hong Kong, you know, serving the global markets, I thought, okay, I think I would like to take my own stab at it. And I put together, I kind of Googled, how do you write a business plan? And I put together a business plan for a multi-brand retailer that would be online only to start with. And off of that first pitch, raised $1 million to launch that business. And then I started calling my friends and saying in the industry and saying, how do you start a jewelry company? Because I really didn't know. And I depended on the fact that we're usually not inventing something new. So let's find out how others did it and let's replicate it and hopefully bring our own spirit, our own stamp to it, right? And we launched that business in 2011 in December. And in December of 2015, we rang the bell on the Australian Stock Exchange floor as we brought the business public. So it is the fastest startup to IPO in jewelry retail history. It still hasn't been beaten, you know, so we're faster than Blue Nile, faster than Pandora. And it was a small IPO, but those can be much harder because it's a larger percentage of the wallet that you're taking from the investors, usually the smaller investors. So it was an amazing, amazing learning experience with an incredible business partner who, you know, added her local knowledge of Hong Kong, where we launched it, to my knowledge of the jewelry industry, so that ultimately we had stores in London, New York City, and Hong Kong, and, you know, did that a successful IPO in under 5 years, which is a bit crazy.
Wow. I mean, that's incredible how you didn't stop to think, how can I do this? And you just took action and you just Googled and called people and just figured it out. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, my personal network was my ChatGPT. It was my propensity of the age, you know?
Wow. And this just gets me also thinking, by the way, what got you thinking, wow, I want to be a part of this world?
A part of what?
Jewelry and gemstones.
Oh, I actually didn't have that thought. When okay. I first got into jewelry, I had just graduated from university. I was living on a girlfriend's couch and I wanted a door. I just really wanted a door. And I knew that being, you know, waitressing and being a receptionist wouldn't get me a door. And people said to me, oh, people pay the people who make money, right? So salespeople get money because they make revenue, so they get money. So I was like, I should be a salesperson. And I went to an employment agency who sent me to a jewelry manufacturer who told me, no, you can't work here. You don't have any sales experience. And I got a job then at a print manufacturer, a studio of artists who drew all day, you know, all week. They drew little swatches with the print, like the print that's on this beautiful dress my husband gave me for my birthday. And I would go with rolls and rolls and rolls of these sketches that I can't remember how much we sold, like, but all day Monday, I would make telephone calls to Donna Karan New York, J. Crew, Tommy Hilfiger, to their designers and say, are you looking for new sketches? Are you looking for new sketches? And I'd build out my meetings, my, you know, sales appointments all week long, Tuesday through Friday. And then with a big wheelie bag full of these silk, you know, watercolors, I would go door to door to door in the garment district of Manhattan, New York City, selling these prints. I think it was like $180 a print, and I got a 16% commission. But you worked hard to earn a living. And after 6 months, because it got under my skin, I went back to that jewelry manufacturer and said, this is what I've been doing, and this is how much revenue I made for that company. Will you hire me now? And they did. So it could have been a toy factory. I hate to say it could have been a vacuum cleaner factory, but it happened to be a jewelry manufacturer. Yeah. So it was an accident in a way.
Do you believe in coincidences, or you think this was something it was meant to be?
Well, I believe preparedness plus curiosity meeting opportunity is what brings us to where we go. Coincidence, I don't think I believe in that. But I think you're drawn towards the things that you are drawn towards, and what you experience informs what you're capable of. So, you know, something was definitely there. And that animosity for being turned away really served me as a salesperson, right? Like, I have to figure out a way that I can be valuable to this person. And really good businesses do that, right? They say, how am I uniquely positioned to solve a problem for this company that I want to be my buyer or my customer? Or how am I uniquely positioned to create an opportunity for them? And if I can solve that, then they'll buy what you're selling. So I think that is what ended me up in jewelry, discovering through the hard graft of analyzing people's assortments and trying to create the opportunity or solve the problems, developing a real eye for non-derivative design that would be fresh and exciting in the market. That was a learned thing, you know, that then made me, as I am today, uniquely focused on only the diamond, gemstone, and jewelry industry. You know, I've been asked to look at, you know, cosmetic brands or fashion. And I go, because this 26 years now has made me uniquely positioned to solve problems and create opportunities here. So I'm going to stay here.
That's exactly what attracted me as well. I mean, of course, on LinkedIn, there are a lot of other people who are also in the same industry, but somehow you attracted me the most. And I felt like reaching out to you.
Yeah, I love that you reached out, and I love that somehow what I preach, which is, you know, back in the day, we would initiate relationships by showing up at a trade show and meeting, and maybe I would be at a wellness event because I'm curious about that as a human, or maybe you would be at a jewelry event because they wanted someone to speak on wellness, and maybe we'd meet, right? But today, we have a 24 hours a day, 7 days a week opportunity to initiate relationships with people. But the only way we can really attract the people that may or may not be interested in what we are is by being pretty open kimono, I like to say, like pretty vulnerable about what who we are, you know? So people used to criticize me back in 2017, 2018 for putting pictures of me in my garden with my feet up on LinkedIn, or putting pictures of, you know, me a little sweaty after the gym without the right retouching. But I was letting people know who I was. And that maybe would help cross out the type of people that are only interested in someone different than me reaching out to me. So I love to hear that, you know, the authenticity behind our content, you know, is still resonating, even as my company got bigger and bigger. And I do need people to help me now to answer all the DMs, which come in, you know, by the hundreds a day. But because, and that's our lead generation tool for our business. So they can't be, and I can't possibly answer them all. So I do need help now, but it's still my fingerprint. It's still my profile. And I hope it's still my heartbeat that you can kind of feel out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also just going back to the time when you were working as a salesman, going door to door, and you did, I'm sure that you must have faced setbacks at that point in time. How did you deal with them?
Well, I think probably not as well as I deal with them today. But I think at that point, I didn't feel like anyone was rejecting me. I felt like it wasn't the moment. They didn't have a problem, or they didn't need an opportunity, or, you know. So, well, let me tell you a tiny story. Before I met my gorgeous husband, who I've been married to for 23 years since I was 30, before I met him, I would date like all my girlfriends. We would date, and I would kind of date guys for about 3 months at a time. And then I'd say, okay, that's not going to work. And my girlfriends kind of said, like, how do you, you're like a machine. How are you doing this? And I said, well, you know, and of course, sometimes I'd want someone to ask me out and they wouldn't. And I'd be like, ah, okay, next, you know. And my girlfriends would be like, aren't you like wondering why he didn't know? Why doesn't he like you? Is it, you know, the way you look? Is it the way you talk too much? Is it? And I'd say, well, no, like, not everybody's going to like me. I mean, just the numbers aren't there. It's not going to be that way. And so I tend to not take it personally or think that it's about me. I would think, okay, they don't need designs, or they don't need a new jewelry, you know, vendor. I wouldn't take it too personally, particularly back when I was going door to door to door to door. It was a voice no one they had heard. It's almost the more mature I get and the more well-known I become, the more I think, you know, hey, I'm pretty great. Why aren't you coming? You know. So I think the key for me was, you know, it's not about me. It's not about me. You know, I'm doing my best. I'm standing in my truth. I'm being authentic. And if the answer is no, next.
Mm. And just now, if this is something personal, only if you call to share, please feel free to do so. Was there any point in your life at that point in time where you were very close to, let's say, feeling broken? Oh my God, I'm doing something and it's not happening. Did any of these kind of instances really happen?
Yeah.
At that
Yeah, and I think I'll step you forward into the business that I launched, the first business, not my current healing company. There were a couple of times where, you know, you knew how much money your business cost every month, and you knew how much you had raised, so you knew what we called your runway, right? To when, you know, if you don't get enough revenue in, you'll have no money left. And I saw the end of that runway like a cliff in the near distance at least twice during those 4 years. And one of them was even very close to our IPO. And my business partner, you know, it would have been unfortunate. It definitely would have been sad. My skin wasn't in the game. Again, I didn't connect myself personally to it. So my business partner at one point said to me, maybe we should stop. Maybe we should give everyone a month's notice. we have enough money to pay everyone next month, then we won't have any expenses and we'll just wind it up. Because it's so hard to create a world-beating jewelry retail brand, right? And I talked her out of it. It was not an option in my mind. I was like, why would we do that? Because if there's still a way to win, if there's still a way to succeed, I'm gonna try, you know? And that's something, I don't know when it came in me, because I think people have it or they don't have it, or maybe they learn it. But it's like, and you can maybe speak to this a little better than me, when you're running for a bus or someone's running away from you, you want to catch up with them. I'm trying to think of something everybody could relate to. If you feel like the bus starts slowing down just a little, like maybe the driver saw you in his rearview mirror, you run faster, right? Because you're like, I think I might have it, you know? But if you feel like he hasn't seen you at all, if you let yourself believe that, you kind of go, I'm never going to catch up with the bus. You slow down. So something about my mind always felt like the bus driver might have glimpsed me in the rearview mirror. So if I just keep running, say he did glimpse me and I stopped, well, then he'd give up too, right? So I just felt like you have to encourage the universe to stop for you by continuing to run.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And I think so far by whatever you have shared, and I think it has always been your persistence, your positive mindset, that hope, that belief, and just keep going at it.
Yeah, I mean, it does. And I feel like you can maybe describe it or have better words, because this is a world that you live in. You know, I have had days where on a Sunday, I will cry, you know, and say, you know, what if the worst thing, because you get nervous, you know, I get nervous, even though I've said everything I've said to you, which is true, I get nervous. And I go, oh my gosh, you know, what if all three clients cancel this month? And we've got to load in three plus the next two. I'm talking about my current business even, you know, because we're very boutique, like, you know, what would happen? And I try not to think about it because it doesn't feel very positive, right? But it's back there worrying me. I feel a low-level sense of nausea even. And somewhere along the line, and it's usually on a Saturday and Sunday when I can afford to, I will go, okay, fine. What if it happens? What then? And what will my plan be? What if the worst thing happens? What if four clients, what if all five resign? I have 1 month, then I have 40, no, no, no. I have 30 days, 20 days of work that I could reach out to these people and I start making the plan. Like, and when you are taking action, you are less vulnerable than when you can do nothing. So almost by going, I'm going to choose to like cry hysterically and really think, what if I lost everything? What would the next step be? Even if it's like, oh, I couldn't do it after that month, then what? Well, I still have my beautiful children. I still have my beautiful husband. I still have my beautiful brain. I have all this experience. I will then do something and I will learn from that. And then I start going, okay, now what do I do about this thing that's happening right now? And I start planning and I start kicking things into play and I start taking action. And even if I'm kind of making no progress, at least I'm doing things. And that makes you feel like you're running for the bus, you know?
Right. So it's like you channel your energy of worry and fear into action.
Yeah. But in a way, you've got to kind of like kiss that rock bottom. For me, I've got to kind of really be frightened. And then I go, okay, stand up, wipe yourself off, and figure out what can you possibly do? Because if you only have a month left, you know, you are in the middle of the arena. The line is there. You have the sword. You better fight, right? And then I get the energy back. But it has happened to me. I mean, I could count, you know, probably on two hands how many times in 30 years it's happened to me. But I use it as a catalyst because I'm human. I despair from time to time. And then I click into, okay, so we're not victims. What are the actions we can take? And if the actions fail, the actions fail. But at least we're going to like fail fighting.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And learn something out of it.
Yeah,
and
obviously. Yeah.
So, you know, when you're speaking, because you're also a speaker, right? And you're speaking at these events or you're going to meeting, big meetings and conferences. And so what's that one thought, you know, that you go with knowing that you'll be there with other brilliant minds that, you know, speaking of confidence?
Okay. It's going to be a little bit backwards, but be curious, you know, never think that you're the smartest brain in the room. If you are, you're in the wrong room. So I try to choose the rooms. Like I always say, I look for Federers and Serenas to play tennis with because that's how your game gets better, you know? So I'm curious about the other people. I try to learn, like I go to an event and I'm going to have a talk at the end of the event, for example. I went to the International Colored Gemstone Association and I gave the penultimate talk at that 3-day event to like 500 people. So the whole time I was there, I was talking to everyone who is maybe only in colored gemstones, whereas I do diamonds, jewelry, and gemstones, right? And so I was asking questions. I was learning. I was being curious. I was trying to find out. Whenever I go to talk, there's two things then very practically that I think about. What is the title of the talk? And what did we tell people they were going to learn? Because I always want to make sure what's written on the tin is what's inside of the tin, right? They bought peas, I'm bringing peas, right? So I constantly think about that as I'm crafting the talk. And then I think about, you know, learning about the people in the room and what will be valuable for them. So if during the time I'm there, I hear a pain point or a desired opportunity or a problem, I try to make sure that I can address that and reflect back at them what they're experiencing so they can trust what I say. Because you trust people who listen and understand, even if it's, I don't know the answer, but here's a framework I use to find answers when I have a problem like this. You know, so I think it's being curious, delivering what you came to deliver and listening.
Beautiful. And do you have some sort of like mantra or any practice or anything that you hold on to till this day that has helped you on your journey?
Boy, I'm going to say I don't right off the bat. When I was working for other businesses, I had journals. I have stacks of these journals because I would think things through, you know, in my journals. Now, as I've run my own businesses, I surround myself with women and a couple men, who I talk things through with. And I constantly challenge myself, you know, like, what did I miss? What is the new way to do this? Is the way we've been doing it up until now wrong? Is that why we've reached this struggle point or what have you? But I don't. I go to the gym and I am like, people are like, oh, you're so dedicated or you're so disciplined. For me, I have 4 children. I have, you know, a team of 23 people. I have back-to-back-to-back Zooms. I'm always with other people. I go to the gym and it's for me. It's my body that I'm so lucky to have that I get to go to the gym and challenge it, lifting these heavy weights, and it's silent and it's quiet and it's giving and it's restorative. And I love it. And when I can't go to the gym, I get a little, not high strung, but maybe a little high strung. Like when I'm on vacation, like, where's my gym? Where's the gym? Cause I need to feel that when there's so much you cannot control in the world, I like to be in control of what I can, and like eating the right healthy things, you know, challenging my body so that it remains strong and healthy as I'm, you know, halfway through nearly my 50s, you know, that's a real important time for me. And I walk. And I walk at least 10,000 steps a day, usually more. And I do these things before and after I work. And those are really the closest thing I have to kind of quiet meditation in moments of, because a lot of people say, oh my God, you do, I do, I travel a ton. Sometimes I'm home 1 week out of six or 1 week out of five. If I'm feeling a little bit overwhelmed, I do like a kind of non-sleep deep rest where I will just, and this is pretty amazing. And my colleagues are pretty amazed by this. One of two things, non-sleep deep rest. I can just lay down and I literally go on YouTube and I put in however many minutes I have, 40 minutes non-sleep deep rest, 20 minutes, whatever, 20 minutes, 15 minutes non-sleep deep rest. And I just listen to that. Slow the mind, stop thinking, solving, preparing, you know, being in the middle of the arena, just breathe. You know, I do that at least a couple times a month. And I also can sleep on command. So like sometimes I do this Harvard Business School program and there's 20 minutes between classes and it's 90 minutes a class and you're participating. You're really, you're showing whether your brain is getting it or not. So it can be a little like a lot of high energy taking. So I can go back to my room, set my alarm for 20 minutes, put an eye shade on and fall asleep until the alarm goes off. I don't know where I developed that, but I do that as well.
Wow, those are some great practices. That's wonderful to know. So yeah, as we are running out of time, I just have one last question for you. How do you define prosperity?
Oh boy. I would love to think of a great answer, but I think it'd be more kind to you to tell you exactly what came into my mind. The minute you said it was security. Security. In every way, you know, that I live with a gentleman who I trust and who trusts me. My children know that I am there for, even though I work like this, I will stop everything for them and they can rest assured in that. And I know that I've created an environment where we're safe and we're healthy and we're doing everything we can to feed the positivity and the strength, whether that's physical, financial, mental, you know, having security and peace is prosperity to me. Not having $10 million or $10 billion, but knowing that you're safe and not threatened. That allows you to get into the ring in business or whatever it is that you're choosing to do and threaten yourself. Because you know you're very safe in your home and in your life and in your love. And that is prosperity to me.
That is so beautiful. That was so well said. And with that, thank you so much, Elle, for being with us today and for sharing those beautiful insights and your story. It has inspired me today, and I'm very sure that our listeners are going to love it and be inspired. So thank you so much for making our lives better.
Thank you for asking me. A lot of people bring me on and ask about how do we grow our profit more quickly? How do we reduce our operating expenses? I can talk about those very well. But I think that this is the important thing that underpins everything. You, and I'm not aligned, but if you work to kind of align who you are and what you believe with what you do every day, whether you're selling donuts, you're selling jewelry, you're selling, you know, equipment or offering a service or improving people's mental health. If you have those things a lot, I think it's so important. So the fact that you described this podcast to me, and I wish you so much success with it, I think it casts a light on something that people don't talk about as really the integral grain that's got to be in place for all the other success to happen. So thank you for creating the podcast. Thank you for inviting me so early in its days. And I'll keep watching and listening for your success as you continue.
Thank you so much. The pleasure was and the honor was all mine. And thank you for being one of the foundational voices of this podcast. Thank
You're
you
welcome.
So much.
Okay, bye for
and
now.
And so to our listeners, bye. And all to our listeners, I'll see you at the next episode. Keep listening. Keep getting inspired. Be happy. Be healthy. See you all.